I'm excited to share this pretty unique story of a former celebrity hacker who in some circles is considered the unsung hero of the hacker community. I came across this likable character completely by coincidence on a mixed trip to the West Coast. I don't actually have any ties to the hacking community. He was the roommate of a friend I was visiting. This episode is a bit different from previous shows in that it is more like a biographical documentary. The story almost reads like an outline for a Hollywood movie. Admittedly, the marketing theme is a bit further removed. However, if you want a marketing meditation, I'd suggest considering the power of positioning or spin. You may notice how differently the roles of the characters could be perceived in this story, depending on how the details are laid out. You may find the colors blending to gray. Enjoy.
What is the DNA of business marketing? How do we market ourselves now and in the future? Brand communications is evolving. Are you? Let's explore together. Spiral upwards. This is Spiral Marketing.
Friends, fellow hackers, and tech folks, while working on my book, I'm trying to reach out.
So I'm sitting here with John Draper, one of the original hackers before there were even computers, went to prison for it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And was the 13th employee by contract for Apple.
Right. That was, yeah. Now, I'm not sure that I'm the 13th. Somebody might dispute that. So why don't I say I was one of the earlier.
One of the early.
The earliest contractors.
Yeah.
I was in the group of earlier contractors that were hired. Would be the best way to put it.
Perfect. So you've got a rather complete history of hacking.
Yeah, I can tell you what not to do.
I'm interested in knowing a little bit about how the hacking community has developed over the years and how the concept of hacking has changed in a nutshell.
Well, I can just say the hacking community has now been split up.
Okay.
You've got the black hat hackers. These are the hackers that go out and sell zero-day exploits to the highest bidder, not caring who they sell them to.
Okay.
They're the ones that go out and discover these exploits, and they use them for nefarious purposes. Okay. They use them for breaking into computer systems, planting Trojan horses, logic bombs, and all these other nasty things they can put into a system that are timed to activate themselves at a certain day and time. They can do that. And they are very good at what they do.
And then the other side are the white hats, right?
You got the gray hats.
The gray hats. Okay, perfect.
So the gray hats are the people who used to be a black hat hacker that have gone to the other side.
Okay.
So they've had both malicious hacking experience, and they've also had most good hacking experience because they've gone through the right school of thought on the whole process, what is like politically correct, what isn't politically correct, and all that stuff. And you got those kind of people in our categories in that kind of like the gray hat area. Mm-hmm. Okay, then you got the white hat hackers. The white hat hackers are people that are going to accredited computer security schools, colleges and universities, and other hacking thing. Even the NSA has hacker schools. And you could join one of these things. And, of course, they're going to want to know if you have a criminal record, and they'll let you pay. You do. But in those kinds of hacking, and a lot of the law enforcement communities are also trying to get the interest of hackers to work for them.
Okay.
To get their security act together, because law enforcement definitely has got some security issues as well.
So that's how it is now. What is your earliest memory of hacking?
Earliest memory of hacking was when I got a teletype, the ASR33 teletype.
What is that?
It's an old clunky teletype machine. It's a mechanical terminal. In other words, and you hit the key, it's all electronic, makes a huge racket of noise.
So is it almost, would you call it a primitive computer?
It's just a computer terminal is what it is. It's a big thing. It weighs a couple hundred pounds. And it eats up paper like you wouldn't believe.
Okay.
Some of them have fan-fold paper. Some of them have just continuous roll paper.
What was its function?
Its function was to basically send digital data down the line into and put them on print.
Okay.
Your text, hi, how are you, would then get printed on that ASR33 when converted into ASCII.
So a little like a telegraph.
Exactly.
A little like a digital telegraph. Yeah, and exactly. What did you do with it?
Well, with that, I can call a number. You have to have a modem, first of all.
Okay.
I had an acoustical coupler modem.
Okay.
I'd call the computer on the phone. I'd hear the shriek in the phone. I'd put the phone down on the modem, come back and say, ready on the terminal. Now I'm connected to the terminal.
Okay.
And I'm connected to the ARPANET at that point.
How did hacking fall come into play?
Well, in the ARPANET, it's a gentleman's system, so they're there to help you. So the first thing I did is I typed in help.
Okay.
Sure enough, help came back. Told me how I can connect all the tips. Space, take, type L, space, and the name of the host, and it'll come back and connect you to that host. And every host has got a free account on the host with limited amount of memory. You can use what's allocated on the memory, and you can run all the library programs, and you can do all these things. You can write a program, but it's save it on the machine, but don't expect it to be there tomorrow.
Okay. So how?
And so students and stuff like that can access educators from MIT, can access Stanford, and connect to the Stanford machine. And by the way, he could also log into his own account on Stanford. So he can direct long distance to Stanford for free. And it's his big interconnected network called the ARPANET.
Interesting.
And that's how that network got started. Then they had mail relayers, people that do relay or UUCP called Unix to Unix copy programs.
Well, give it to me at a high level. At a high level, how did hacking come into the play?
Well, hacking came into the play when modems first started available to John Q. Public.
Okay. So what did the hackers do? What did they do?
Well, first of all, the legal hackers are the ones that just wanted to use their modem to connect. A lot of people would publish bulletin board systems.
Okay.
And one bulletin board system did and published the addresses and phone numbers of all the other bulletin board systems. Mm-hmm. So hackers would get on bulletin board systems and they'd run up huge phone bills connecting out of area calls to connect to these computer systems, mm-hmm. to download programs, download tips and techniques, and of course, download hacker tools.
Okay, so yeah. What year was that around, approximately?
This was around 1982, 1981.
Okay, 1982, 1981.
There was no internet then.
I see.
You could get on bulletin board systems, mm-hmm. or you could get on other systems that are just allowing Unix shell access. One of the first ones that I got on was called the Well. WELL, well.com. Mm-hmm. So the Well has its own software running on it, and I got invited on the Well, mm-hmm. for being who I am. I had an account on the Well called Crunch.
How did you develop a reputation with those folks?
I was organizing what I called the Programmers Network. It was a network of programmers interested in trading information about who's good, who's bad, how to deal with clients. There was an open source share section where you can download sections of code that's shareable to other people. And this was on a system called the PicoSpan. It started off on the Well back in the early 80s.
And you were in your early 30s then, right?
Yeah, I was still pretty old then. Yeah.
You felt old?
Even back then.
Really?
Yeah.
Because you were dealing with much younger people?
I was somewhere in the late 30s, early 40s at that time.
Okay. And you
math. Okay? I was born in 43. Figure what's 82 from 43. You could figure it out. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. No, well, the reason that I ask is because I think that it's sort of interesting to know what phase of your life you were in at this point, because we're talking about Silicon Valley in the early 80s, right?
Yeah.
And
this was after Silicon Valley. This was after the growth of Silicon Valley became what it is today.
So where were you in the world?
Well, I was in the late 80s now. Let's see, I left Autodesk in 86, 87. Mm-hmm. I was at Autodesk from 84 until 86, I
think. And Autodesk was in what, Cupertino?
It was in Santa Rosa. No, it was in Sausalito. Sausalito, yeah.
So just a little bit north of San Francisco.
Yeah. Okay. I had a nasty commute I had to look forward to every day, but got to the point where I could work at home and only had to show up on Fridays during Beer Bash Day.
That's funny. Well, okay, so forgive me, but at what point did you go to prison?
Oh, before that.
Before that?
Yes.
Okay, so can you give me a quick story on that?
Yeah, in 72, the initial bust was Steve Wozniak wanted some customers to sell his blue box to. And I says, well, you sell it to this guy. And I says, look, I can get you a blue box. It's going to cost you this much money. If I give you my number, I want you to always remember my number and do not write it down ever, ever, ever. Okay. Well, he, of course, wrote it down. He bought one of Waz's blue boxes. Mm-hmm. He used one of Waz's blue boxes from home. If you use a Waz blue box, And even if you connect to one number correctly and successfully, you'll have dropped 20 other trouble cards in the process of getting that number to work, and you have gotten great focused attention by the phone company. So Waz's box was flawed. It was supposed to be a sine wave, but it's a square wave. When you send a square wave down a phone line that's designed for sine waves, you get a lot of other shit in there that can easily be filtered out. And the phone company does indeed filter that shit out for their own integrity.
I see. Okay, so just for the people who are not that technical, the blue box, it was a machine. Was it an illegal piece of technology, or was it just...
Yeah, they eventually passed a state law in the state of California saying that possession of such a device is illegal.
Okay, but at the time it was not, correct?
Yeah, well, no. At the time I was, it was still illegal.
It was already illegal.
It had been made illegal early in the 60s.
Okay, what was your interest in it?
My interest in it was how the phone company worked.
Okay.
And how it was integrated in with the military Audubon network.
So would you say at the time you were a bit of a black hacker?
Well, I was definitely black hat.
A black hat.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, okay. What was that about for you?
I was just interested in the fact that you could blow it, you can call an 800 number, blow it off, and make call someplace else and not get charged for the call.
Okay.
That was the biggest flaw in the whole network. Just to make that not happen would cost the phone company much more money than it would be for them to deploy the now current SS7 system that's out there. And that's already 45 years old.
Right. Well, interesting. So, Crunch, you have had this pattern for a while of wanting to find flaws in systems. And previously, it sounds like you were interested in exploiting them. But now it sounds
like... Well, I tried to approach the phone company through a relatively indirect way. Getting a lot of responses, by the way.
That's good.
A rather indirect way. Mm-hmm. Okay, in the sense that a lot of my responses have been, well, we'll see. Oh, you're the guy that busted. Since I got busted, I had a felony record. Sorry, we can't hire you.
I see.
That's their attitude. So I did offer, even right there when I was just before the judge. Mm-hmm. I says, look, judge, I offered this technology to Bell Labs and I just got the door shut in my face. That's what I told him. I says, there is no mechanism that AT&T has that will allow a person like me that can discover these flaws and help them fix it. And he agreed with me. But he says, the law is a law. I'm going to have to sentence you. And he sentenced me to 4 months in jail.
Gee. At a high level, why did you go to jail? Because you hacked into a system, or is it because...
I was in knowledge of forbidden information was the best way that I could describe it. I had information that was forbidden.
What were you sentenced with?
Title 18, Section 143.
Which is what?
1343, fraud by wire.
Fraud by wire. That's what they ended up saying.
It's the general catch-all that if you do anything with related to the phone company, it falls under that category of laws.
Interesting.
And that's punishable by 5 years and $10,000.
But you got 4 months?
I got 4 months, then I got $1,000 fine.
Did that change your perspective a lot?
Well, it just made me more careful and not allowed any of them to be around me.
I see.
Even that I couldn't get around.
No.
Because on the second bus, some people from Southern California wanted to come up and visit me.
Oh, wow.
And I said, yeah, but there's two forbidden items you cannot bring up with me. You can't bring up a blue box or a red box. Leave it at home. If I catch you with one, I will personally turn you into the authorities. That's what I said. This guy come up and visited me, and he didn't show me his blue box. Thank good. I didn't know he had one. Uh-huh. I was at the precursor to the homebrew computer club called the Potluck Dinner on Manalto Avenue, and where the precursor to the homebrew computer club started. And I was basically walking down the street, you know, back to go across the street to Roy's place, because that's where I was hanging out. Uh-huh. And Adam called me over to his phone and says, here, talk to this guy. And I talked to him, hey, how you doing? But he had blue boxed the call, unknowns to me.
So you got...
So they...
It was an ambush.
Yeah, basically, that's exactly what happened, because he had prearranged with the FBI to make a blue box call on that particular phone, gave the phone number to the FBI. They had all their recording equipment up there. They had my name. They had my name being mentioned. They had my voice, which you verified with voice prints. They had me. They had me hook, line, and barrel, and I didn't know anything at all about it.
If he called you on a blue box, then it doesn't sound like you should be committing the crime. It sounds
No. He made the call. He made the blue box call from the payphone without my presence. I was in the corner store.
So what did they position? What did they put on you?
They had that. That phone was recorded. The line was recorded. My voice was on the phone. The blue boxes were on the phone.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't deny that I didn't have the blue box. That would have been...
Oh, I see. So you did have... You still had a blue box.
I didn't have one. Adam had one, but I didn't know he had one.
Oh, I see.
He had it in his pocket, probably when he was at the store. I wasn't going to be so intrusive upon his privacy to ask him to empty his pockets. Of course not.
Okay.
So he went over to the payphone. I was still in the store getting some food for across the street.
Mm-hmm.
And he went over to the phone. He made the call, and he saw me walking back toward Roy's place. He called me over.
I see.
Well, and he says, "Here, talk to Jim." Oh, okay. Hi, Jim. How you doing? I'm fine. Look, I'm busy right now. I gotta go.
Sure.
You know, but there was my voice. There was a blue box call. So, FBI had it on recording.
We're good.
It was an open and shut case.
Okay, got it. Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you for going through that. How was your experience with Apple?
Fairly good.
Yeah. You're still friends with Steve Wozniak to this day.
Oh, absolutely. Jobs. I'm just a speck of dirt under his shoe as far as job is concerned.
Oh.
You know, I mean, I did the phone board. I got it working. I got it doing some good demo tests for Apple to go push the product. They had little integer basic programs that Woz wrote that run. They use as a phone board to do functions like answering service and stuff like that.
Do people have any reference for what a phone board is now? What is that? Because I have no
idea
what
that is. No, it's a telephone interface board. It's to interface your Apple II computer with your telephone. It was a telephone interface board. Software control over your telephone. That's what it would do.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, you can have your address list up there. You can have your contacts up there on your Mac or on your Apple. Push on the contacts, hit dial, and it would dial the number. You go over to the phone, pick it up. Hi, how you doing?
I see.
It would connect to the phone line down at the box.
Was this back in the 80s?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
This was in the 70s, mid-70s.
70s. Yeah. Wow.
And this was illegal to connect it directly to the phone. And that became the sticking point. And that was why analog, we couldn't market it.
The phones were analog, weren't they?
Yeah, but you had to buy a special device, $150 a month to use this device.
It was a lot of money.
Well, Apple got the device for me to get the phone bar to work with the device. And I'm sorry to say, Jobs, but I can't get it to work with this device. They make it so you can't get it to work with this device.
I see. And did your relationship with Apple end when you went to prison? Is that as I understand?
Pretty much. Yeah. No. After I got out, remember, I got out in 76 and then I started working at Apple in 76.
Oh, okay.
So it wasn't until after I moved to, I had this job offer with Andy, Pennsylvania. Apple was just a small little bonunky company in this little strip mall, which had this big 3-room warehouse kind of place in it with little cubicles all around it. And me and Woz had this other little annex building.
Okay.
And then a couple doors down. That was the extent of Apple. That we had no idea Apple was going to go public. I went and did this work for Andy in Pennsylvania.
Uh-huh.
So I packed up my Apple II and packed all my stuff up and I drove to Pennsylvania. And Andy was with me because Andy came out to the West Coast.
Who's Andy?
He's a guy I've been working with a long time in Pennsylvania. I've been doing a lot of work with him.
Okay. Was he related to that crew at all?
No, he's a Lehigh student, and he came to the Silicon Valley, went to go to the Homebrew Computer Club.
Okay.
Because he'd heard about it and wanted to go there, and that's where I met him. I met him also at the potluck dinner. So then Andy brings me back to Pennsylvania to work with him on his projects. He had a project where you had a Pong game that you can play with another cable subscriber with a Pong game using your touch-tone phone. So you can use up, down, left and right to move the paddle with your phone. Just hit the buttons and move the paddle around to intercept the ball.
Right.
And you can play against some arbitrary user of some other cable user out there somewhere.
So this sounds almost like an internet application, but it's through the phone.
Yeah, you dial into a phone and then you get a recorded announcement saying, "Stand by, you're queued. It'll say, tune to cable channel 3. I tune to cable channel 3 and I see a Pong game being played on the TV channel. And it's being played by somebody else. And then another recorded announcement is supposed to come on saying, in 1 minute, be prepared to play.
Mm-hmm.
And then in 1 minute after that, there'll be a little tone coming out. At the tone, you may begin playing. At the beep tone, and I use now the touch tone phone and looking at my computer screen to move my paddle up and down, left and right.
What was that social scene like? Was it fun?
No, it was non-existent. It did not even exist at that point. No play-by-play over any cable network had ever been done before.
Well, when I say social, I mean like actual social between people. Were these your friends?
No, these are just other random cable subscriber users. Could be in a completely different neighborhood.
What about the people that were in the homebrew, the compute? What is it called? The computers?
Oh, the homebrew computer people didn't even know about that.
Oh, they didn't even know about
it? No, they didn't even know about it.
Neither did the potluck dinner people?
No. Me and Andy just started to go off that off on it because I thought it would be a really big money-making thing. Yeah, we ought to have two people play a video game using a touch-tone phone to control paddles. That's something we could do with existing technology. Back then, there was still no high-speed internet available.
Right. Well, and nowadays, we don't even have those touch...
And nowadays,
those phones are practically gone.
You could do things like these real-world simulations like Third Life or Second Life or whatever it's called.
Right. Yeah.
So that was back then. And this was in Pennsylvania. Okay. So I go back. We find ourselves a nice home in the Poconos Mountains in Pennsylvania. This was around October. And I invited all my East Coast friends to our housewarming party. Okay, well, I told Andy, I said, make sure my phone is disconnected from the line. We don't have any phones connected to these phone lines because these are phone freaks coming over. Mm-hmm. So we took our precaution to disconnect and remove all of our phones from the thing there. And we had all of our activities downstairs. And then upstairs was like our area.
Okay. Would you say you're more of a phone hacker traditionally?
Well, yeah. You know, that's what I was pretty much, you know, doing, was just discovering flaws in the phone network. Like I would be scanning for watch extenders. Like I'd call every 800 number in a bank and I would mark every 800 number that answered with a dial tone. Because if it, hey, call an 800 number, answer with a dial tone, that is something valuable. Mm-hmm. Because there's something on the other end of that dial tone that they don't want you to know about. Because you have to type in a 4-digit code, and if you type in a 4-digit code, usually it happens to be 1234. Because they don't change their default password. Dimension PBX's 1234 was the code to get into their watch extender. So and that is by default 1234. And you don't set those when they set them up. They just don't bother with it.
So 1-800 numbers often had a security flaw.
Well, you know, it wasn't, it had nothing to do with the 800 number. It was a Dimension PBX that had the security flaw.
Okay.
This was an AT&T PBX system called the Dimension PBX. Okay, large companies would get these things. They usually serve tens of thousands of phone lines in an office. Mm-hmm. They're programmable. I can call into them on an 800 number, and I get a dial tone. I key in a 4-digit code, and I get another dial tone. I can key in a 4-digit extension and get directly connected to the extension of the person that I want to talk to without going through an operator. That was useful. Back then, they didn't have a system like that.
It's a little like hacking the Matrix, isn't it?
Right.
That's kind of what you were
and
doing.
Then, yeah, right? And if I did 1234, and then if I do 83, that means give me a Watts line. Mm-hmm. 9 gives me an outside line. 83 gives you a Watts line, or 81, or 84.
I see. So as this technology
became... But that's not the phone company. That's a PBX. I focused all of my hacking into that one.
So...
Because it was hard to get those 4-digit numbers, and that's what I did the phone board for. The phone board would automatically scan for those numbers. When it found it, it would identify it on the Mac screen.
So what's the bridge?
I go out hang gliding along the coast. I come back. Oh, my God, look at that. I found 3 codes already.
Interesting. Can you connect me to the current state of technology? So how does that
I have been somewhat removed. I have been very removed from the current state of telco technology.
Okay.
I've had no active desire to even understand how the cell phone system worked. And that's why I had to do a whole lot of research for the past 3 months on the SS7, because I didn't know SS7 from shit from Chinola. It was totally so what is SS7? Oh, that's a thing that replaced boot boxes. That got me up a little bit more interested. Oh, they made some major modifications 10 years ago, letting outside access to SS7. Bad idea, because it's a rose garden. Once you get into it, you're trusted by everybody.
Interesting. Well, remind everyone what the SS7 does at a high level.
At a high level, all it does is connect your cell phone here, my cell phone, to your cell phone in Germany, wherever your cell phone happens to be.
Okay, so it's just connecting the signals.
Just connecting the two cell phones together.
So this has become one of your current pursuits is...
My current pursuit right now is, oh my God, there's a huge security flaw here and the people need a wake-up call. And that's what I'm doing is I'm just phoning it in.
Okay, good. And who do you want to listen?
AT&T, Verizon, T-Mobile, small little independent companies in Bodunk, Africa, somewhere in Native Village. Because you can have a cellular service with just a tower computer, okay, and this thing called OpenBTS, which is a system for connecting all the little cell phones. It's like a little cell tower is all it is.
But what is the message to Verizon and AT&T? What's the message to them?
Well, they need to clean up their act and figure out how to block certain SS7 signals that go into their network.
Because right now they're all effectively vulnerable.
Not all of them. They got the main 80% of the ones done by just simply blocking one command. Could maybe break 80% of attacks that get into the network now, which is good. It's a good start. But there are other ways of getting into it. And all of these companies, the third-party companies that buy these softwares, programs, can now have the power because they've already got their SS7 access through this application program. And they can just sniff the network and see what the application program is sending to learn what the commands are. And then once they have the commands in, they can just go into themselves through their SIGTRAN interface, which that program uses.
Very cool. Okay. You have come through this journey of being a hacker before that was even a term, hacking phone systems before computers, went through, you're effectively put on up on a pedestal as the kind of criminal that represents these...
The evil man.
The evil man.
Yeah, I'm the evil man. I'm the one you don't contact, you don't deal with on any level.
Right, except meanwhile...
Totally opposite of what Kevin Mitnick is, by the way. He received fame and fortune with his little antics. He was able to find himself a good agent that promoted him from day zero. And that's what I've been looking for since day zero, was an agent that I could trust. You'd be surprised at how the huge parade of agents would come into my being. They would use all kinds of third-party ways of getting in. Oh, you like working out? I'll work out with you. Not no more. I don't do that anymore. So, because I just felt there were too many people out there. And it was also really good. It was really a good vetting process, too, because you'd be surprised that, well, that could be used to vet people out.
I see. Well, how do you want to help people now?
I want to help people now by making people that are extremely dumb and totally uneducated to become a little bit more educated when they use a computer, especially when they get on the internet and they connect their computer to other computers in the world.
Okay.
They need to be pretty vigilant about what's out there. And right now, anybody can be a target. It doesn't matter how good your security is on your home computer. It is a target and they can will break into it. It's not that they might break into it. Now it's they will break into it. So depending on the software that you use on your computer, you have to do two things. Number one, you got to protect your data just from its own outside forces. And you have to protect your communication with other people by encrypting it and making it private so no third-party person can intercept your calls. Well, you made a good step by using WhatsApp. Just to let you know that WhatsApp does go through their Facebook servers, so they can indeed... There indeed is a record of your call, by the way.
Right.
FYI.
Okay.
But if you'd use Signal, it would have been no recommend.
Yeah, so that's interesting. Crunch and I have been communicating a little bit by WhatsApp now and a little bit of Skype, but I don't think you're as comfortable with Skype.
No, I don't trust Skype as far as I could throw them, and that ain't very far.
And you don't really like calls or texts. You prefer a system called Signal.
Well, Signal is just like a regular phone. It does text, but there's no 140 character limit of the text. It's just text. They're actually using a system called Text Secure for their text passing processes. And then there is the voice part of it, which is part of, and it's an open source product called Open Whisper Systems. And that was developed by Phil Zimmerman, the creator of PGP, Pretty Good Privacy. If I would trust anybody, I would trust Phil Zimmerman. If he puts the code out in public domain, free to all, look, I can look at my Signal source code up there on GitHub anytime I want. I can see the source code of exactly the latest version that I've got on my phone is up there now. I can look at the source code of that and easily tell whether somebody's up there doing funny stuff. And they've got many, many people up there maintaining the source. So if anybody does anything really funny, other people will notice it. So they can't put Trojans in there. They can't pollute the code. It's got to go through a very regimented process of delivering that code and making that code available to other people. It goes through many, many eyes before it gets put up there.
Okay.
And that's why I use Signal.
I see.
That's the only reason why I use Signal.
So that's pretty good right there.
Yeah.
Right?
So there's no metadata. There's no record of your call being made. There is a server that handles your calls, but the server only knows you by a hash code. And it's a one-way hash code, which means if I know my username, Crunch, then I can run it through a hash algorithm and get that hash code anytime I want that hash code. But I can't go from the hash code back to getting what the hash code, what generated the hash code. It's called a one-way algorithm. It's called a hash thing.
Okay. Does it bother you that you just said Crunch is your hash name?
I don't care.
You don't care. Okay. I just wanted to make sure. Yeah. Okay. Good. Well, how far do you look into the future with these issues?
With Trump elected president now? I see a very dismal future.
Really?
Yes, unfortunately.
What are you expecting or concerned that you might see?
I think we're just going to have more of our privacy eroded away. Mm. I think what might happen, don't get me on this, but I'd say within a few years, you won't be able to use application programs like Signal unless you were jailbreaking your phone. So that's going to happen. There's probably going to be more open smartphone programs out there now. Mm-hmm. That'll be open because now I don't have to depend on Apple to approve that application Signal. How and why Apple approves this Signal is beyond me. They must have done a good job of getting Apple to buy into that fact. I guess when Steve Cook became their CEO, Steve Cook took a pretty positive attitude toward people's privacy by not giving the FBI their access that they wanted, mm-hmm. as well as allowing us users now to use Signal on their iPhones. It's nice of them to let us use the Signal on their iPhones, as well as other applications like WhatsApp and Wickr and Telegram.
So that's Apple wanting to do something to protect our privacy.
Yeah.
That's good.
And Signal is so secure that, number one, there's no way to track the call. Mm-hmm. Your conversation may be winding up in their computers at the NSA big data center in Utah, mm-hmm. but it'll just be a bunch of jumbled encrypted bytes they just scooped up off the web. Here's a Signal call number and puts my hash code in there for my Signal hash code number. Because mm-hmm. that was what they caught off the internet along with the encrypted data and all the other stuff that follows it. They just scooped that all up because they're going to probably, in 10 or 15 years, they'll probably figure out how to break it.
How do you feel about the hacker community right now?
Hacker community is good, especially the computer security community. They seem to have their act together. They seem to be doing pretty good as far as thing. But you see, it's right now the hacker community or the white hat hacker community is called the Old Boys Club.
Ah.
You got to be a member of the Old Boys Club, which means you got to have certifications up the wazoo. You got to be certified Microsoft certified. You have to be Microsoft. You have to be Netgear certified. You have to be certified through INSE. You have to be certified all these different computer security certifications. And when you have all these certifications, all these diplomas things hanging on the wall, then they would consider you being a viable pen testing company.
Okay.
At that point, you can go on.
So penetration testing is one of the ways that hackers make their way into the white hat world and succeed.
Yeah, that's basically they break into systems and then they tell the company exactly how they did break into their systems. They write up a report on it. Mm-hmm. And sometimes, most of the time, what the hackers will find is they'll find a flaw that already exists. That the client just failed to upgrade. They just failed to upgrade their system. And maybe they missed a couple of upgrades 2 or 3 years ago. That exploit still existed. My pen testing application program detected it, saying you've got a security issue here. Needs to be addressed. You're using an incorrect version of IPsec, the VPN software.
Mm-hmm. Who do you think is most vulnerable?
People with Windows machines.
People with Windows machines currently?
Yeah.
And what puts a black hat hacker on their radar? You have to have a network of a certain size? Are they looking for certain?
Almost anything. They'll grab anything they can get because they'll use them on botnets. They'll just hijack a computer. Now your computer is a member of a botnet. It might be called upon to scam.
So they're just looking for any vulnerable networks that they can hack into.
Yeah, exactly. There are, of course, people looking for big targets. Mm-hmm. Usually those big targets are attacked different ways. Mm-hmm. Somebody could be clever enough to just drop a thumb drive on the sidewalk next to the entrance of a big company. People walk into the company and they reach out, the thumb drive. They'll pick it up. Oh, interesting. They'll take it to their computer, plug it in. They're infected.
Oh my gosh.
So a lot of companies now
could use some education to that.
Yeah, a lot of companies right now are actually not allowing outside employees. You're not allowed to bring in your personal iPhone anymore, mm-hmm. or you have to leave your phone in your car.
If you have a top secret clearance, especially.
If you're a programmer, perhaps they'll enforce that no cell phone policy. Because people that I know of have jobs, I never call them on their cell phones. They say they don't bring them to work because they're banned from taking them to work. It's like the military now. In the military, it gives you access to the comm centers, top secret military information. You know, they will search you every time you go in, and they are looking for CDs, especially CDs that have that Chelsea Manning put in, their Lady Gaga CD. That's what it was. She brought in a CD, a Lady Gaga CD. She burned that a collateral damage thing on it, and she put it up on Wikipedia.
That's right.
Or WikiLeaks. So you got to understand what the attack vectors are. I mean, there are just so many of them, and they're just so little, simple, little pure things, like dropping a thumb drive down, maybe leaving a thumb drive in your gym locker or something. And
what resources do you suggest for people who want to learn more about how to protect themselves?
Well, there are a lot of good application programs out there. There's securityfocus.com.
Any others?
Oh, God, there's lots of them. You can't. Sophos is a good one. I'm using Sophos myself. Sophos is a system I use to the virus scan my Mac.
All right. What's your favorite story of hacking throughout your lifetime?
Well, it seems like catching everybody's favorite was it didn't sound so big of a deal for me, was we found the secret number to the White House.
Wow.
The White House CIA crisis hotline number.
Oh, my gosh.
And we didn't know what it was. But when they called it up, there was a very impolite and hostile person at the other end of it saying, get off this line.
Ah.
So we knew that that had to be something special.
Okay.
So that's what inspired us to do some deeper.
Was this the 70s?
This was the 70s, yes.
Ah, yeah.
And so there wasn't that much security around the White House back then.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just a regular 800 number. And we did the, we got 800-424-9337. We found a 7-digit translation.
Oh, you remember.
Yeah. So we got 202-456-9337. Last 4 digits were always the same.
All right, Crunch, I think we should probably wrap up. What is the best place for people to learn more about you and to reach you?
jdcrunchman@gmail.com. I'm JD Crunchman on all of the social networks.
Mm-hmm.
I'm on Signal and I'm on Wicker.
Okay.
Contact me first on Wicker as JD Crunchman, of course. Ask me for my phone number, and then I will give you my phone number over an encrypted channel, at which time you can access me over other phone-related accesses like WhatsApp and Signal.
Well, there you go. What, you don't really have a website, do you?
I have webcrunchers.com. It's just kind of like...
What is it?
Webcrunchers.com.
Webcrunchers.com? It's actually
It's my old Captain Crunch website. It's got a lot of my stories up there. Mm-hmm. It's got a blog up there. It's got a few other interesting stuff. I've also been posting people about my health issues when I'm in the hospital up there.
I see. All right. Well, Crunch, thank you so much for being on the show, man.
Thank you very much. Yes.
Pleasure.
Well, I really hope you enjoyed hearing the story of John Captain Crunch Draper, the unsung hero of the hacker community. John has been dealing with a few health problems over the past couple of years and wanted me to let you know that he will be providing network security audits for small donations to his health fund. You can email him directly about that at jdcrunchman@gmail.com. That and all links will be included in the show notes. I'd love your thoughts on this one, especially since it's so different from previous episodes. Thanks so much for listening. Cheers.